You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up today.
What's good, y'all? Welcome to In the Deep, a deep league-focused fantasy baseball podcast, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Jordan White, and I'm joined here once again, finally, after it feels like forever, by my good friend and co-host, Christopher Schwebze Weber. Schwebze, how you doing, stranger?
How weird is... Oh, hi, friends. My God, I almost forgot to do the greeting.
Oh, did you just forget I was here? Yeah, whatever.
What's good, y'all? No.
I swear I will end
you.
Don't steal my lines.
So weird. So weird to not only have both of us back, but to have you not sounding like Barry White anymore. That was a very, very sexy week last week from you.
I mean, when is it not a sexy week for me? That's the real question.
Yeah, but this was like extra, unnecessarily sexy.
Yeah, baby. Real sexy. No, I can get down there when I feel like it. It's just that usually I talk like a nerd, like I sound right now, pretty much. I don't know.
More nasally than an emo band in the 2000s.
Midwest emo, specifically. Because I am a Wisconsin boy, but yes.
We should change the intro to just some like noodly guitar playing.
We should change the intro to... Actually, you know what I would really like? We should change it to Hook by Blues Traveler.
I love that song. I unironically love Hook.
I think most white people do.
I am very white people.
It's like that plus like Living on a Prayer, like the top two, I think.
Oh, probably. what about Mr. Brightside?
Oh, actually, yeah, that's true. I mean, we have video that I will not post anywhere here. of me singing Mr. Brightside.
Yeah, it's I have it confirmed on video that you cannot play Mr. Brightside without Jordan doing spontaneous karaoke.
It was planned karaoke, but Mr. Brightside was played because
you
obviously
can't prove that.
Actually, you're right. I can. I don't actually have proof of that. But, anyways, now it's just it's nice to be back with you here, buddy. Nice.
I missed this.
Getting back into the swing of things here. If it's a little bit hectic and has some chaotic energy, it's because it's what time is it? It is 2:30 in the morning where Schwebzi is right now, and it's 1:30 in the morning where I am. Because as per usual, we do not record on time or prep as much as we should beforehand. So we're just rage writing notes on our players that we're going to talk about. And I think some of that chaotic energy is going to come through, just a little teaser, with my second deep dive that I'm going to do later. And maybe it's the coffee that I drank earlier talking, but I'm feeling pretty crazy about that second one.
Your second player is pure the madman has done it energy.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I'm probably going to get lambasted for that one, and maybe a little bit deservedly, but there's your little teaser for the end of the episode. Before we actually get started on any of the deep dives here, let's do the usual thing here at the top of the episode and plug our social media pages. If you want to see us tweet about, like, honestly, not that much baseball for me sometimes, I apologize for that, but about really anything, you can follow myself individually at Bunt Singles, Schwebzi at Schwebzi, that's S-H-W-E-B-S-I, and then if you want to follow our podcast account, our shared account, that's going to be at In the Deep PL. We have a mailbag link, a Google form that you can submit mailbag questions to in the pinned tweet in our shared profile. Again, that's at In the Deep PL if you ever want to submit any mailbag questions. But with that, Shrubsy, there was something else you wanted to bring up, right, before we started actually going into the deep dives?
Yeah, there was a tweet that I saw a couple days ago from Rob Silver, a very prominent member of the fantasy baseball community, great analyst. He tweeted out that possibly the biggest mistake I see people make in fantasy baseball is looking at recent performance, like the last week, the last 2 weeks, the last month, and assume it's predictive of what's about to happen. It can be interesting to look at. Lots of things are interesting, but it's not helping you.
It feels like an attack on us personally. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't. Like, we definitely,
that's
like, we
all we do.
We quote a ton of like recent performance stuff as like, hey, it's of note. This person has been pretty good recently. And then we try to like point that out and say, like, usually we provide like a yes or no, this is going to be a good or bad thing, right? Like, or there's something interesting here beyond just like the surface level stats.
Right. And it's like, I know we're not much of like, we're not really a fantasy theory podcast where we're more of a, you know, we talk about specific players, but I did think this was interesting because it is a tool that we utilize, but you know, I do think it is bad analysis to look at the last 2 weeks and go, yes, he was good and he will continue to be good. Like, that's my starting point, you know.
Correct.
It's like you that's how guys stick out, and once a guy sticks out, you dig in, you try to figure out why they've been good for the past 2 weeks, and then from there, like, try to figure out, is this sustainable? Are they going to collapse? And like, I love because otherwise you're just looking at bad players or players who have done badly. Mm-hmm. And the pool of bad players is a lot bigger. It's hard to pick those guys out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's this is always for us, like, we look at recent performances, and a lot of it is because, I mean, even us, like, we have this podcast, we don't get to watch every single game, and it's hard for us to keep tabs on every single player's performances throughout like the week when we're trying to figure out like what we're going to talk about on the podcast. So it's good for us to have that to be the kind of genesis or like the spark that pushes us to deep dive on a player and see if something is legit or not, and kind of like figure out if the underlying data does support that or not. It's a good starting point, right? Like, it's a good starting point. It's not the end all be all. You shouldn't just like follow it, and it shouldn't just be gospel. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was a good and poignant tweet, honestly.
Yeah. I don't want this to come off like, hey, we used that, and like, I feel the need to defend us. It's like, I want to talk about our strategy and like how we use that tool, because it is just a tool in the tool belt of an analyst, you know, like trying to use arbitrary endpoints to try to like
yes.
pick out the guys who are on a tear. There was actually I think we should probably like link to that tweet in the notes or from the Twitter account, because there was a lot of interesting discussion there from, you know, notable guys such as like Alex Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
And like about the guys who are a lot smarter than us tweeting things like, oh yeah, the hot hand in baseball has been proven to exist, and like linking to actual, you know, research done on that topic. There's a lot of good stuff in there. If you happened to see the tweet or want to search it, I think we should try to link that.
Yeah, I can link that definitely in the show notes and throw that in there. I will say, I think that you said that people that are much smarter than us, I think that Alex Chamberlain might be the only person I can think of in the fantasy baseball community that is more self-deprecating than we are.
I'll take that bet.
Like, all the time. I mean, this is, Schwabzy, that was not a challenge. Please don't take that as a challenge. But,
you haven't seen how much I can hate myself, Jordan.
That's awkward. I don't like that. I don't like that. That's not good energy to put into the podcast. Where am I supposed to go with that, Schwabzy? Do you want to talk about Jaren Duran? Like,
I was just trying to think.
How do I skate past this very awkward segue?
I was just trying to think of like how to work a Bane impression into here. Like, you were born. I was born in the self-deprecation.
You thought the self-deprecation was your ally.
You merely adopted self-hatred. I was born in it. Yeah. I definitely am exaggerating that. But yeah, why don't we get into our deep dives?
Let's do this. So we are going to have you start off by talking here about Jaren Duran, who barely squeaks in under our 20% threshold here at 19% roster ship. Take it away.
Yeah, and I'm very glad he did squeak in, because this is I was very excited to talk about Jaren Duran. You probably remember that last year he was one of the most anticipated call-ups, and then unfortunately he scuffled a bit, mm-hmm. and the fantasy baseball world collectively kind of forgot about him, or like put him on a shelf and said, yeah,
I wouldn't say forgot. I think they actively chose to ignore him.
Right. It's like, which, oh yeah, yeah, he had a bad 100 plate appearances. Let's forget about him. Or exactly. Like, you know, he's dead to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it turns out that a prospect scuffling in his first season isn't a death sentence, and the kid is actually pretty good. And as a baseball analyst, I am contractually obligated by the Fantasy Baseball Illuminati to mention that the same thing happened to Mike Trout. And because you have to say that every time a prospect has a bad cup of coffee and then goes on to be good.
Mm-hmm.
The too long didn't read version of this section is literally just that Duran is doing almost literally everything better than last year. Like, he was just straight up bad last year.
It was not a high bar to clear.
Right. He did not play like himself. But I don't think that we should be surprised that he's wildly outperforming last year, because like, he was a fantastic prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the reason that people pushed him off to the side, it was a whole 112 plate appearances, which is basically nothing. At the same time, though, this year, this great performance that we've seen this year is only 62 plate appearances, which is, again, basically nothing. So why am I personally giving more weight to this small sample size versus that small sample size? For me, it's largely because, like, this is who he was supposed to be. His carrying tool in the minors was his speed, which he paired with a good enough bat and kind of good enough tools across the board to get on base and wreak havoc once he was there. Joe Drake of Prospects Live called him like more of a sum of the parts kind of guy with true double plus speed, and he has the talent to be an impact bat at the top of the order with a floor of a speed only fourth outfielder. Obviously, that latter bit is not what we want, and it's kind of what we saw last year. What dialed the hype up to 11 last year was a swing change in 2021, and I know you were all over this last year, Jordan,
yeah.
in the off season.
Incredibly pleased with this. Yeah, I talked about it in our preseason episodes, I think.
Yeah, and that swing change led to a monster 2021, where in about 300 minor league plate appearances, he put up 16 home runs and 16 stolen bases, mm-hmm. which, you know, if you extrapolate over 600, is a nice little 30-30 season. But, you know, then, of course, he struggled when he hit the majors. If you look at last year's struggles and the way that he struggled, it was very much a worst-case scenario. Like I said, he had middling tools across the board. He struck out 35.7% of the time after never reaching 25% in the minors, and frankly, he just looked overmatched. He whiffed way too much against every pitch type. But then this year, it's been the complete opposite. He's cut his overall whiff rate from 35% to 23%, which is huge, mm-hmm. and his contact rate has correspondingly leapt up from 76% to 84%. That's like significantly below league average to a good bit above league average. He's chasing less, swinging at meatballs more, which is something I always like to see. It means he's seeing the ball well and noticing when it's, you know, right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, he just seems way more comfortable at the plate. So from a power perspective, we talked about that swing change. I'm not sure that Duran ever hits 20 home runs in a season. Like, I think I'd be surprised by that, you know, unless we see some more development there. But he's already matched his barrel total from last year in like half the plate appearances. And he just doesn't need a ton of power to be a great fantasy asset. He's got 4 stolen bases in only 62 plate appearances. That's an easy 30-plus full season pace. His sky-high 383 WOBA is supported by X stats that are basically, you know, identical to his actual stats across the board. I think, like, his WOBA, batting average, slugging are all, like, within, like, 10 points of his, you know, corresponding X stats.
Nice. Yeah, you like that.
Maybe even more importantly, for our fantasy purposes, Duran looks completely locked in as the everyday leadoff hitter for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a potential complicating factor there because at some point, Enrique Hernandez is going to come back. But we don't have a firm date on that at this point. So, I mean, Duran is safe for now. But I think it's pretty safe to say that the Red Sox aren't going to send Duran to the shadow realm when Hernandez comes back. It's way more likely for, like, I don't know, Rob Refsnyder or Franchi Cordero to lose playing time because, you know, the Red Sox just have a lot less invested in them. This is a really, really aggressive comp, but, like, if everything clicks for Duran, I feel like his 99th percentile outcome is like a Starling Marte kind of player. Like mm-hmm. 280, 290, bunch of steals, double-digit home runs. Like, if everything clicks, I think he can be that. And obviously, I'm willing to take a flyer on that kind of upside. I feel like offensively, Harrison Bader is a pretty likely outcome here.
I could see that, yeah.
It's like kind of like Starling Marte, but a little bit worse all across the board.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, you guys know how much I love Harrison Bader. If you're a longtime listener.
Yeah, for like Deep League, for sure. I mean, how many times have we talked about Harrison Bader on this podcast?
Literally constantly.
Yeah.
Just can't forget those locks, man. But like we said, 19% rostered already. So you're probably either already too late or you'll need to move quickly because he is not going to last long on waiver wires. And he actually hit his first home run of the year yesterday/today, depending on when you listen to this and when we're recording this and blah, blah, blah. So,
time's fake anyways. It doesn't matter. Time's not real.
It's just a construct created by man, but
absolutely.
He hit his first home run and, that is sure to, make his roster numbers jump up a little bit.
Digging that. Do you know was that home run hit at home or away? And then where was it hit? Do we have an idea of that? Was it like a wall scraper? Like, where does it rank on the wood it dong scale?
For those that don't know,
wood it dong is an excellent excellent Twitter account that you should follow if you're on Twitter. Super great to see what balls that were hit for home runs in other parks. Just comparing them to the other MLB stadiums and if they would have been home runs there. And it'll give you, like, out of 30 stadiums, how many parks it would be a home run in.
I actually don't see it.
Oh, dang. Well, it's kind of sad, but...
You know why I don't see it is because I'm looking at the Chicago Cubs hitters.
You absolute fool.
Absolute fool. This was a... just looking at this spray chart on Baseball Savant, it looks like it was about a 415 to 420 foot shot to dead center.
Oh, so that's gotten most stadiums. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Would have dung, probably.
Everywhere except for Fenway, basically, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah, ironically.
With that deep chasm in pretty much dead center. But yeah, that's great. Yeah, super encouraging. If you can start hitting for any like modicum of power, like you said, if you can get to that double digit total, that makes him much more attractive. And I do agree. I think that's a really good comp, the Starling Marte comp. Someone who can hit like double digit homers and contribute a ton of steals. It's a very specific profile, like, that I think is super valuable in fantasy.
I think that's like like 99th percentile.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, if he reaches that, I'd be a little bit surprised, but I think it's you know, in the realm of possibilities.
For sure. Yeah, no, I love Duran. Obviously, like, I talked about him at length last year, and it didn't pan out how many analysts, including myself, wanted it to. But it's encouraging to see that he is rebounding well in his second extended stay in the majors. So I hope that he's been very, very good. I would be surprised if he loses playing time once Enrique Hernandez comes back. And like you said, I don't think Ref Snyder is going to challenge him at all. So definitely a good call out here. And I'm kind of... I can't even really actually say that I'm that surprised that he doesn't have a higher rostership, even with his very, very short stint. But I think he'll probably, like you said, it's going to go from 19% to, I would say he's going to be an easy graduate next week.
Yeah, yeah, which is why I'm glad that we got to talk about him this week, because I do not think he's going to last long.
Last chance.
As per usual, you were ahead of me on this by a whole year. I'm only now catching up to your picks.
Biggest complaint about me, always too early. Let me talk about Evan Longoria real quick. So, God, please don't
buy it a nickel.
Please don't clip that out of context. Thank you very much. So yeah, I'm going to talk about Evan Longoria real quick here too. So Evan Longoria is someone that I have covered a couple different times. Schwebzy and I both, I think, have covered a couple different times over the course of this podcast existing. And I feel like we sound like broken records talking about Giants players again. We love our Giants here. We do.
Oh, and I do need to, I'm sorry to interrupt. I do need to bring up one thing.
This man, I have not done an episode with this man in 3 weeks. And no, it wasn't because I had COVID. That was a lie. He's just a jerk and interrupts me.
One of my new colleagues at PitcherList. I'm the head moderator over at PitcherList, for those who are unaware, our Discord server. And one of my new colleagues there, Justin Havelock, gave me a suggestion for we've talked about
yes.
Yeah, we've talked about how, like, our pet teams, I guess, are the Mets, Diamondbacks, Brewers, and Giants this year. And we were looking for an acronym to, you know, just describe those four teams whenever we pick one of our pet teams, one of our players from those teams. And we got some suggestions. I don't know if these are suitable for regular use here, but
oh boy.
I mean, the one that I liked particularly was My Burly Dinger Guys.
That's very good. I do like that one a lot.
Which is good because it's always hitters. It's pretty much always hitters from these teams.
And we love our BP boys too. So that totally makes sense.
I actually, while you were gone, while you were under the weather, I don't know if I told you this. One of my best friends told me to use the Evil Empire. Sorry, not the Evil Empire, the Republic for these four teams. Because all of these cities have been pitted against the Yankees in the World Series at some point, who are, known as the Evil Empire
is very
to a lot of people.
I dig this. I like that we're getting such good suggestions. I was surprised that we got as much feedback on that as we did.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, anything more than zero is a surprise to me.
It's so great. It's. I mean, I know that we've done this for, what, 50, this episode 56, right? Yeah. It still blows my mind that people listen to us. Like, not saying that, and that's not even me being, like, self-deprecating. It's still just, like, a weird concept that people choose to take time out of the day to listen to us. And that's very, it is flattering and also very humbling and, like, very nice.
And thank you. Thank you all, because yes. I don't know why you would do this to yourself.
Y'all the real MVPs, truly. Putting yourself through this every single week. Specifically,
that's funny.
Specifically you, Yancey, because I know you're listening to this right now. But
yeah, whenever anybody subs to my Twitch chat or anything, but like literally without fail, it's like, congratulations on the worst $5 you've ever spent. I don't know why. Thankfully, you guys get to listen to this for free.
I was gonna say, fortunately, they're not paying for this. This is completely free for them, which is very nice. But yeah, all right. Now,
Evan Longoria,
since Schwebzy so rudely, but also kind of like appropriately interrupted me. We sound like broken records talking about Giants players all the time. That's too bad. You're going to have to deal with it again. He's still fantastic at the plate, and I feel like at 6% rostership, he's pretty criminally under-rostered based on his recent performances after his last brief injury stint. Yes, he still has the injury issues. That's the biggest, well, one of the biggest barriers for him, obviously, being an older player. He's getting injured a decent amount, and that's the hard part, is obviously you can't really let that roster slot be taken up by someone who's going to be hurt a whole bunch. But when he is healthy, he is so, 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 so good. The encouraging part about his most recent performances is that he's hitting the ball exceptionally hard. He's got a 50% hard hit rate since he came back from his last short little injury stint. That brings his season-long hard hit rate to 43.5 on the year, and he's hit safely now in 8 of his last 9 games that he's played in, and you love to see that. So the biggest hurdle, like we've talked about previously, with a lot of Giants players, is the fact that the Giants just like love to play platoon split matchups, and that doesn't do us a ton of good if you're playing a weekly league. So it's like usually a better move to roster these Giants hitters in daily moves leagues. Luckily for us, though, is that when Longoria is healthy, he's really just largely immune to this sort of like fickle handling by Gabe Kapler and the management over in San Francisco. Although he did sit tonight against Lance Lynn, and Lance Lynn shoved. So that's kind of disappointing. But another excellent part I will say about Longoria's profile, which is a development over the past couple of years, that's really cool to see and enticing for folks that are playing in on-base percentage leagues, is that he's putting up an 11.9% walk rate this year, which is right in line with last year's rate of 12%. Like, he is walking for the first time since, I think, 2013, when he was with the Rays. It's the first time he's put up double-digit walk rates with consistency. It's really, really excellent to see. And getting on base like that is always going to be a positive. It's really interesting because, basically, I mean, Longoria was with the Giants prior to Gabe Kapler becoming the head coach, becoming the manager. The first year that they were together as manager and player, Longoria's walk rate was just 5.3%, and he hadn't put up, like I said, a walk rate north of 10% since 2013. I haven't seen any articles covering this specifically. I remember seeing like an article about Buster Posey making a stance change later in his career, obviously, after like however many years in the league. But it feels like between Posey doing that, Longoria seeing a resurgence, obviously, in his plate approach, and like Brandon Crawford in the year that he had last year, Brandon Belt even has been fantastic over the past couple of years. It seems like San Francisco has this really good knack for helping hitters, especially older ones, reinvent their stances and swings to find more success later in their careers like this.
Yeah, if I were a veteran, I would simply start walking at twice my career rate and also start hitting the ball way harder more often.
It's wild, right? And like,
if they ever like write a book on this era of the Giants, I will devour that, because it's really so interesting.
Very much so. Yeah, it's been great. So I will say, though, Brandon Crawford, not as good as he was last year at the plate, has been pretty poor in comparison to 2021. Obviously, Buster Posey, we can't really talk about him because he's off sipping margaritas somewhere and enjoying his retirement, probably, I assume. But really, it's just clear to me here that there is some organizational philosophy being applied when it comes to plate approach. And while correlation isn't necessarily causation, it's also worth noting that in tandem with the better walk rates, Longoria's barrel rates have continuously climbed since Kapler took over as the Giants manager, and he would rank in the top 20 in barrels per plate appearance if he qualified this year. Obviously, he does not qualify yet because he has been hurt a decent amount, but like you look at his barrel rates, 2020, the first year that Kapler was manager, it was 11.5. Last year, 13.4. This year so far, limited action, 15.3% barrel rate. Fantastic. You really love to see it. Overall, I think that the Giants have a way with helping these hitters fight Father Time, and I think Longoria is probably the greatest beneficiary and most consistent beneficiary. I don't know if he's necessarily 12-team viable, obviously, but he should be on most 15-team rosters when he is healthy.
I love it. You know I'm a fan of what they do over there and like the miracles they seem to work with their veterans.
It's fantastic. It's so fun to watch. I love how, like, I've said this, and I say this phrase every single time I talk about the Giants. They just are able to squeeze as much juice as possible out of the folks on their roster because they just play the platoon splits really well, swing path matchups with different pitchers and things like that. Like, they have that all down as well. It's just very impressive to see how well they can eke value out of that entire squad.
And hey, on a related note, you know who's back?
Lamont Wade Jr., baby.
Lamont Wade Jr.
Late night Lamont, my boy. Yeah, he is very excited about that.
He came off the injured list 2 days ago, and he has hit leadoff both days.
Jeff Kiss. No notes. No notes, just more Lamont Wade love. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break here, and we'll be right back with our other two deep dives for this episode. All right, and we are back. Schwebzy, let's have you talk about someone that Yancey, while we were hanging out and doing notes before this episode, slightly tried to convince you not to talk about, but you said, to heck with Yancey.
Yeah,
I talked about him anyways. Harold
Ramirez. I was very ready to talk about Harold Ramirez. I had it written down in the notes. And then in our weekly chat with Yancey, we tend to talk whenever we're preparing our notes. I asked him because he's our you know, resident friend of the podcast, resident Tampa Bay Rays fan. I asked, you know, what do you think about Harold Ramirez? Should I talk about him? And Yancey, very, very good at fantasy baseball, very intelligent person, laid out some very good, very valid reasons why I should not talk about Harold Ramirez. And then I said, I'm going to do it anyway.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
Because of who I am as a person. Look, I didn't get here by listening to people who are smarter than me. Ask Jordan. Jordan is much smarter than me.
He
and
got
I
here,
literally
he got
never
here by pretending
to
be smarter than the people that are smarter than him. Like,
I got here by Jordan putting me in his backpack and carrying me every step of the way.
It's 100% untrue.
I got here by spouting hot, unresearched takes and by only looking at the pretty red and blue colors on Baseball Savant.
Baseball Savant sliders go burr. That's the extent of Schwebzy's. No, it's not. Schwebzy's very smart and does much better deep dives than me.
Your words. I've definitely talked about Harold Ramirez on this podcast before, and basically nothing has changed. Ramirez, yeah, like, it is who he is and will never change. Ramirez is from, like, that Yandy Diaz or Josh Naylor school of hitters where they hit the absolute heck out of the ball regularly, and we're all just praying for a launch angle improvement to unlock their power potential. And that sort of player can go one of two ways. You can go the Josh Naylor direction where that improvement actually happens and they start hitting the ball in the air, or you get the Yandy Diaz direction where they just keep on doing what they're doing. And, like, the Rays acquiring Harold Ramirez seemed like one of those inevitable things, because the Rays, like, love these players with incredibly niche, valuable skills that they either nurture into becoming more complete players, or they just put them in the best position to succeed using the skills that they do possess. Now, I can't speak to what the Rays coaching staff has done with Harold Ramirez or what they've tried to work on with him, but it looks like we've got a Yandy Diaz situation and not a Josh Naylor situation. It's like the Rays liked their one Yandy Diaz so much that they decided to go and get another one. Harold has done basically zero of the things that I like to see in a power breakout, and he's actually gone backwards in some areas. Like, he's hitting the ball at a lower launch angle than ever before. So is this a bad thing? Yes and no. Like, yes, it's bad in the sense that we just may never see a true power breakout from him. And that's unfortunate because he'll never quite hit the ceiling that his tools suggest is there. But no, it's not bad because the tools that make that breakout so tantalizing are still there, and they just present themselves in different ways that still make him a valuable player. And it's a valuable player that is getting regular playing time for a good team in the Tampa Bay Rays. Harold Ramirez is legitimately elite at not striking out, and he has elite top-end exit velos. So in theory, he has what it takes to hit the ball far and often, but that's just simply not something that his swing makes him capable of. And that's fine. He still has a 96th percentile expected batting average. He's fast. He hits in good lineup spots. And this is the kind of guy, like, that you can plug in when someone on your team is hurt. Like, he's not someone you draft. He's a backup plan, but he's a good backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
You'll plug him in. He'll anchor your batting average. He'll provide a home run here, a stolen base there. You know, not a ton of counting stats, but he will get you counting stats. And you'll probably drop, you know, people in your league or you will drop him and add him several more times throughout the year. And no one will be mad about it. They'll just be like, "Yeah, Harold Ramirez is my worst outfielder. He's fine, but whatever. I'll drop him for the new flavor of the week." I like guys like this because I know what the floor is, and the floor isn't going to hurt me in, like, a fifth outfielder slot. And there's a slim chance that he does do what Josh Naylor did, and he goes bananas at some point and becomes truly valuable. It's really it's a little bit frustrating that this combination of skills and opportunities doesn't result in a more desirable player. Because, like, with his contact and hard hit rates and being on a team as smart as the Rays, it really feels like a really good player is, like, just out of our grasp. But he's still fine, and sometimes fine is okay for fantasy baseball. Over the last 30 days, Harold Ramirez has been the 47th most valuable outfielder per Fantasy Pros, and that's without starting every day. As long as the Rays are dealing with injuries, like Margot is out for a long time, Kiermaier's in and out, I love Harold Ramirez as a glue guy to give you, like, a little bit of a batting average boost while some other guys on your team are hurt. Or, for example, in my AL-only league, I needed a fifth outfielder. Robbie Grossman has been abysmal, so I picked up Harold Ramirez to kind of patch that hole.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, in your deeper leagues, sometimes, like, I know that I am very high on bats like this in general, like high average bats with, like, not a ton of upside otherwise, necessarily. Like, that's fine in your really, really deep leagues. Because for me, like, I know that I'm rostering players, maybe like a Jorge Mateo. Sorry, I'm going to talk crap about Jorge Mateo a little bit. Schwebzy.
How dare you?
I know. This is specifically aimed at you. But at the same time, like, Mateo's average is not very good. Like, the stolen bases are fantastic, but you need to offset that somehow. And that's what players like Harold Ramirez are good for, right? A counterbalance for other players like this.
It's like Harold Ramirez plus Jorge Mateo gets you like Ronald Acuna.
It's well, I, I'm going to give you a complete chance here. Do you want to retract what you just said?
Nope. Leave it in.
This is,
I said what I said.
This is specifically to upset Sperry and 11, and that's it. And Chris. And not, I'm not talking about you when I say Chris, because your name is Schwebzy, just so we're clear. Anyways, these are very specific friend group jokes that I'm throwing in the podcast. Because
look, I just want to point out that the Mateo and Harold Ramirez duo have both more home runs and more stolen bases than Acuna. So
this man is digging his own grave, and I love it.
Just trying to get canceled
by our friends. Yes.
Basically, yeah.
Every single day. I see it in the group chat. speaking of getting canceled, this is probably going to be my biggest dart throw of my entire fantasy baseball analyst career.
I love it so much.
And I want to get... I think I might get lambasted for this one.
This was simply bait because I put this name in the notes.
And then I looked into it. Well, I looked into it and there's a lot to like. Like, the sample is incredibly small, yes, absolutely, but, I think that Jimmy Yacobonis, yes, I'm talking about Jimmy Yacobonis, 0% rostered on ESPN and Yahoo, is my dark horse candidate to eventually end up the closer in Miami by the end of the season.
I feel very confident that what you've done tonight is write the most words that anyone has ever written about Jimmy Yacobonis.
Yes, correct. Probably. And I'm genuinely thinking about writing an article about Jimmy Yacobonis. Like, there's nothing more on brand for, like, this podcast and me as a person than writing about, like, a 30-year-old reliever who scuffled multiple times in the majors and hasn't pitched in the majors since 2020, where he pitched a whopping 2.1 innings. Just, like, this is very on brand for me. So he's on like what, this is his third major league team, I think now. He didn't see the majors at all in 2021 and hit, like I said, 2.1 innings in 2020. That doesn't really scream a potential closer, right? Not great on its face. But I'm really just begging you to hear me out here. Jimmy Yacobonis is a different pitcher than he was since we last saw him at length in the majors, and that was in 2019. So obviously, he's only pitched 6.1 innings so far this year. That is not a large enough sample to make a definitive determination about any pitcher. There's just such a clear difference in Yacobonis' repertoire, and I think it's genuinely made him a very dangerous pitcher. When he last pitched in the majors in 2019 for the Orioles, he mostly threw his sinker and slider, much like he does today. But there are two really key differences: his release point on his pitches and his slider spin rate. So while it's not immensely different, Yacobonis has dropped his arm slot a little bit, which has had a huge effect on the movement profile of both of his pitches. The sinker, which has historically been like an absolutely abysmal pitch, has gotten hit around the park all over the place and accrued a run value of plus 13 between 2018 and 2019. And remember, positive run value is bad for pitchers. It's good for hitters, bad for pitchers. That's a lot in only like 60 innings between those 2 years. It's returned a negative 2 run value in 6.1 innings so far this year. That's very, very good.
That's so much for 6 innings.
That is a lot. It's fantastic. So a pitch that was like completely abysmal is now like returning positive results, which is super surprising. So his slider has always been kind of a yakker. That's really pun intended. It's always had more movement than like league average sliders, but it has way more east to west movement now than it used to. And I'm not talking about like it, he now has like an extra 2 to 3 inches of horizontal movement on his slider. His slider moves a full foot more than it did previously from east to west. That is wild. So best part about that, too, is that the added horizontal movement did not come at the expense of any vertical movement, and the pitch actually gained a couple inches of drop as well. So I'm not sure if this is a pitch grip change or a lot of this is like just the change in arm slot on release or what it is, but I feel like that's a huge boon for his repertoire.
So just for some context for the listeners, what does his slider move like compared to a league average slider? Because we were looking at this before.
Do you want the actual numbers?
Just roughly.
Okay. Here, let me see here. I can pull it up very quickly. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, we were utilizing some Baseball Savant, charts and graphs to kind of.
Okay. Would you like the additional distance or the percent it moves versus the average?
Let's go inches. How about like what's our actual physical distance?
Okay, so his slider has 46.1 inches of drop, which is 5.6 inches more than average. And then slider for inches of horizontal break, 18.8 inches of break, which is 7.3 inches above average. And the last time that he pitched at length in the majors, which was 2019, it only had 6.9 inches of break. So it gained, a full foot of movement east to west, which is wild. And it moves 64% more east to west than the average slider. So it is an absolute frisbee. So it's just so cool. It makes me so happy. So looking at his current stat line, obviously like only 6.1 innings pitched in the majors this year, that's not a lot to make like a real determination on like how good he is going to be long term. Obviously, he's not also going to maintain the absolutely absurd 56% strikeout rate that he has currently. He's got 14 strikeouts in 6.1 innings, just absolutely stupid, like literally video game numbers. But it really is worth noting that his K per 9 in AAA this year was a career high 13.31 over 23 and two thirds innings. That's like way higher than it has ever been at any level in his entire professional baseball career. It just feels like further proof that Yakubonis has unlocked something a little bit different with his repertoire. So I do understand that there are a lot of hurdles for him to clear if he wanted to take a closer job in Miami. Obviously, like Tanner Scott has been really solid in his last five outings, recording three saves. Anthony Bass has a sub-2 ERA on the year. Anthony Bender and Dylan Floro both exist and are still like probably more favorite options. I'm just saying they're more favorite options by
folks. I know.
They've not been great, but they're probably more favored than Yakubonis. But he's clearly found a new gear. And if he can maintain levels of production that he's provided between AAA and the majors this year, I really, truly think that he could sneak into the closer conversation by the end of the season. So I'm saying bookmark this one for your 15-team leagues. I'm not saying pick him up yet. But I would keep a close eye on how he does over the next month or so and see if Tanner Scott continues to perform or not. Because if someone scuffles, I think that there is a backdoor chance that Yakubonis gets in there.
That is how I would describe like Chasen Shreve's performance this year with the Mets. Like, he exists.
That was not meant to be a slight towards either of them. It's just like they're more in the general consciousness of like most baseball fans, especially Marlins fans, I assume.
No, I knew what you meant. Just like they found the language funny. But yeah. So two things about Yakubonis and the Marlins.
Bingo, let's go.
One, it's the Marlins.
Correct.
They are a clear fourth or fifth place team in that division.
Mm-hmm.
And likely to be sellers at the trade deadline. And you know what that means. It means relievers are going to be on the move, probably.
Yeah.
Which, you know, has like, I guess, a 50-50 shot of either muddying the waters further for their closer situation or clearing things up for, you know, maybe an unheralded reliever to take over, mm-hmm. like a Jimmy Yakubonis, maybe. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And the other is just a little fun fact. If you bring the minimum number of innings pitched all the way down to zero, I'm sorry, two.
Okay.
Then Jimmy Iacobonis leads all of baseball in strikeouts per nine.
What is that like? Is it like 19 point something?
It's a shade under 20.
Oh my God. Like 19.7 or something like that?
19.89.
Yeah. So dumb. He's been so good. I mean, the only person that he's really been touched up by in any capacity, what was Pete Alonso?
Yes, yes. Mr. Large Steak Man.
Yeah, your favorite boy in the whole world.
Yes.
Absolutely. Love it.
We actually, Jordan and I, in preparing for this, we watched literally every single Iacobonis strikeout of this year.
We have, yes.
And a lot of those strikeouts came in a series against the Mets, so I just got to watch him repeatedly victimize like J.D. Davis and Eduardo Escobar. And there was one slider that he threw to Pete Alonso that just had Jordan grinning like an idiot.
Oh, I made an audible noise. I would make the noise here on this podcast, but I would like to keep this show.
Yeah, I think terms of service means you can't make that noise.
Absolutely not.
But yeah, Pete got him back with a dinger, but he did make him look very, very silly on a one slider that wound up somewhere in the other batter's box.
Oh yeah, it was great. But yeah, no, I love Jimmy Iacobonis. I think that he's definitely turned into a different pitcher than he was previously. And
you know,
that's the thing is like, if you have a league, like, I mean, Schwebzy and I are in a dynasty league together where we have like saves holds and ratios like K per nine and everything like that. I would absolutely pick up Jimmy Iacobonis in a K per nine league. Like 100%. Schwebzy, don't you dare try to pick him up in our dynasty league. I will. Oh my God. I shouldn't have said anything. Oh, that's no.
K per nine league, you say?
curious.
What leagues am I in like that?
Perhaps I will participate in some chicanery.
How much fab do you have?
All. I have all my fab. Don't worry about it, Schwebzy. Anyways. All right. I think that's it for our deep dives. Do you want to get to some honorable mentions here, Schwebzy?
Yeah, and I think we should take these pretty quickly because we have it as is our way, dawdled.
I did the hand signal of the universally known signal of wrap it up.
Wrap it up, guys.
Let's start with Vinny P. I mean, this is an anticipated one for quite a few people. Obviously, did Vinny P get called up? The Twitter account was always a fantastic follow.
So, real quick, what is your preferred Vinny Pasquantino nickname?
Okay, so I don't want to steal it from you. I'm not going to say it. I like the one that you introduced me to tonight. Like Italian breakfast is always a good one, obviously. Classic.
This was brought up by someone in the Pitcherless Discord. I'm going to try to find their name to attribute them. But it was Pasquatch, which I love. That is so perfect for a big, beefy, strapping slugger.
I do love that one. That is absolutely perfect.
I feel like I don't need to say much about Vinny Pasquantino. It was Brick JB, one of our Pitcherless community members, who has an adorable pup.
Yes, correct.
So yeah, I mean, Pasquantino has displayed a fantastic hit tool, a fantastic power tool, and an ability to not strike out in the minors. The numbers that he put up in the last, like, I don't know, 8 months of minor league play have just been obscene. He's a very, very good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a chance that hitters fail once they hit the majors for the first time. But, I mean, he hit his first home run of the season today. It was an absolute laser beam. I really like his chances to be a solid average plus power bat going forward. I think I lost out on him in my AL-only league because someone bid like 40% of their season-long fab on him.
Jeez.
And I feel like that's an appropriate number. Like I think he's a middle of the order bat. Like I think that's what he does this year.
Yeah, I feel like he's gonna rake. I mean, and like you said, that home run that he hit, I think made, I don't know, it was probably like 3 feet off the ground at its highest point.
Like, yeah, three.
I mean, I'm not good with math, if I'm being honest. But it looked like about 3 feet off the ground, according to my calculations.
3 feet metric. And then there's Derek Hall.
Yes.
Who was called up at almost the same time. He is a Philadelphia Philly, if you're unaware. I was unaware of Derek Hall's literal existence before he was called up.
Yeah.
Just sometimes those like 10 to 20 range prospects, you just never ever hear about them until they get called up. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those situations. And Hall was a bit of a nothing prospect until the past like year, 18 months or so, when he had a power breakout in the minors. And there were some rumblings on fantasy baseball Twitter that some very smart analysts were like, I would rather go for Hall than Pasquantino, just because the cost to get Hall would be so much less. And they didn't think that they still thought the production would be good. He's already hit 3 home runs. He hit 2 yesterday, 1 today. I added him in my NL only league because I desperately need a power infusion, and he's already rewarded me with that 1 home run today. I don't know a ton about him because he was a relatively nondescript minor leaguer, but you know, so far so good. If you need a power infusion and can't get past Montino, Derek Hall looks like a nice backup.
Excellent. Okay. I want to quick jump down to one of the ones that I wrote about because there's not as many of them. I apologize, Schwebsey. I didn't pull my weight in this episode, but I want to quick just cover. It's going to be incredibly short. Miguel Rojas. 3 things that I want to say about him: playing time. That's literally the extent of it. Like, he's not hitting an ideal lineup spot. He's like 7th or 8th right now most days, but he's getting regular at-bats because he's starting at shortstop every single day. And much like knowing, regular at-bats are half the battle. G-I-R-O-H-A-S. Did you like that? That was my fun pun for the episode.
Is that a G.I. Joe reference?
Yes, it was.
That's before your time. I know that because that's before my time.
I watched G.I. Joe all the time growing up.
Really?
I'm actually 74 years old. No, I'm just kidding. I for the folks that are like gonna give me crap about that, I know that G.I. Joe wasn't on in like the 50s. It's fine. But I genuinely did watch G.I. Joe like all the time growing up.
All right. We can move through these next few pretty quickly. Jack Suwinski. I'm very upset about Jack Suwinski because I talked about him on the podcast. I added him in a few leagues and then dropped him when he had a week-long slump. And then he went hit on another home run binge. So yay me. Point is, power is legit. But, you know, don't be scared off by the slow streaks. Nico Hoerner. We have talked about him enough. You guys should know what he does by now. He has a very specific skill set. If you need batting average and stolen bases, Nico Hoerner should be added. He's even creeping up in the batting order like we had previously hoped. He's starting to hit like 5th and 6th.
When you say specific skills, can you say that line? Can we do another take of that? Can you do it in the Liam Neeson Taken voice?
I just don't think I can do an Irish accent.
You don't think so? Really?
As a quarter Irish man, can I is not in my skill set somehow.
Nothing would make me happier than hearing you try an Irish accent.
Afterwards.
Okay. We'll save that for post-pod.
Maybe we could throw that after the outro. Nick Senzel. If Nick Senzel was good, he would be Jaren Duran.
Oh, that's mean.
That I'm sorry. No, it's like
the hater is coming out at the end of the episode.
I swear, that's not me being a hater. That's just Nick Senzel has not performed, unfortunately. Everyone wants him to, but he keeps getting hurt. He's been an everyday center fielder in Cincinnati for the last like 20 days or so, and in that time he has 1 extra base hit. Ugh. And he is not doing anything elsewhere to make up for that. He has been an actual zero for fantasy purposes. Which makes me sad because he was a very exciting prospect coming up. Hopefully he can turn it around. Great ballpark, but as of right now, I am ignoring him.
All right. We kind of covered Rob Refsnyder previously too with talking about Enrique Hernandez and Jaren Duran. You kind of wrote here like some short term value maybe a little bit, but like he's between Hernandez and Duran, like he's gonna get pushed aside. Is he even going to ride the bench?
Probably not long term. Well, Jaren Duran, to fill everybody in, did not travel with the team to Toronto because of his vaccination status.
Correct.
But he did tell the press that their next trip to Toronto, he would be going, which is cool. Good for him for, you know, accompanying the team. So, but while they were in Toronto without Jarren Duran, Rob Refsnyder led off and played center field.
Correct.
Which, I mean, is good. I mean, that shows that they have some confidence in him, because if he was just a placeholder with, you know, the team didn't see anything in him, they wouldn't have him hitting leadoff. You know, I mean, unless maybe with that archaic baseball thinking of keeping your lineup steady and not shaking up roles, maybe that's why you would hit him leadoff. But I think that shows he's hitting really, really well.
Yeah. He's hitting over 300 in the past couple weeks, isn't he?
Yeah, with like 1,000 plus OPS. He's been legitimately good. It's just, I'm pretty sure he's the clear odd man out once everyone is healthy. But as long as Kike Hernandez is hurt, and at this moment there is no timetable for his return, I think Refsnyder will continue to play. Yeah, like I said, just pure short-term value there.
Cool beans. Okay, what else we got here? Tyrone Taylor. I mean, Tyrone Taylor is Tyrone Taylor. He's going to get counting stats. He's going to hit for a little bit of power here and there. The average is not going to be great. But pretty regular playing time right now. Obviously, after Lokane left, so definitely going to stick with that. What else we got here? Oh, Austin Nola. And I kind of want to pair him with Jorge Alfaro, because they've both been, like, really serviceable, honestly, this year. They're both hitting pretty well as of late, especially. And I feel like I would roster both of them in most of the two catcher leagues that I'm in pretty happily. I don't know. This is something that I keyed in on in our preseason catcher episodes, I think, between these two both being valuable. And I think they're kind of showing that as of late. So definitely digging that. You have Kevin Biggio here.
Yeah. I have seen his name pop up a few times recently, whether it be home runs, stolen bases, just looking at box scores, whatever. Zoom tight. And I thought that might mean we got a little Kevanessance, but that's not actually the case. He's still doing what he always does, which is be passive to the point of being a bad baseball player, which is a bummer because he has an intriguing, you know, little power speed combo. With a great walk rate, but unfortunately he is overly passive and is still doing his same old thing, which is a bummer, and I think that makes him not an ad.
Yeah, probably in the same boat. I mean, I saw him hit a tater against the Brewers in person, which was awful. But I also got to see Alejandro Kirk go 4-for-4 against the Brewers, which, while it hurt, was very, very fun, because he had like a double and a home run, and just honestly, like, seeing Alejandro Kirk do his dang thing in person was very satisfying. Also, shout out Michael Waterloo for coming to visit me in Milwaukee. I appreciate that, dude. That was really fun.
I'm now insanely jealous of Waterloo, and he doesn't know this, but we're fighting.
We had the best seats. Best seats.
Are you next trying to make it worse?
Next time you come in Milwaukee, I'll splurge on some real good seats for us again.
Can't wait. But similarly to Jordan's pair of catchers, I've got a pair of Texas Rangers. Leody Taveras is back again, and Josh H. Smith. I mean, at this point, we kind of all know the story about Leody Taveras. He is just loaded to the brim with tools, but hasn't really been able to put it together at any point. He should get you stolen bases, regardless of how, you know, well or poorly he hits. That's really it. If you're desperate for an outfielder and you want some possible five category production, I think Leody Taveras is a nice gamble to make. And then Josh H. Smith, I mentioned before we were speaking with Yancey Eaton prior to recording. He pointed out Josh H. Smith to me, pointed out that Ezekiel Duran is no longer playing and that Josh Smith is hitting leadoff in a lot of games with a sky high OBP and a history of stealing bases in the minors. So maybe an OBP league target, maybe if you just need some stolen bases. I don't think there's much power there, but, and it, you know, third base is not exactly the deepest position. So, you know, Josh H. Smith might be a nice corner infield target.
Excellent. And then it looks like you have one more hitter that one of our podcast listeners chose to go in on here. How do you feel about Luis Rengifo?
Look, sometimes one of our listeners comes to us with something and it's like, oh, wow, man, I didn't notice this player was playing so well. I'm really glad that they reached out to me and told me about this player. And then sometimes they tell us to look at Luis Rengifo. And I look at Luis Rengifo and I'm like, darn it, listener, at shaking my fist at the sky. But no, Rengifo has been good for the last couple weeks. He's hit a couple of home runs in the last week, but I am not seeing much in his profile to actually make me think there's something real here.
Yeah.
He looks like he always does, maybe a slightly better, more contacty version of what he always was, but I'm not seeing enough. I'm not seeing enough of a change to think that there's a breakout happening here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty hard agree. I mean, I feel, I'm trying to think who this is akin to for me. I guess like right now, like Josh Harrison has had a few like good games recently, and it's like it's very much the don't believe his lies thing.
You were in on Josh Harrison at the start of the season.
I know I was, and now I am out. Unfortunately, I think
that love story ended so quickly.
Yeah, I was about to make a joke that was inappropriate for the podcast. I'm going to move on. We're gonna skim past that.
The jokes that start to happen an hour into recording.
Oh boy, God, yeah. Especially at 3:30 in the morning for you. Oh my gosh.
Well,
okay.
One last hitter before we move on to the pitchers.
Oh,
Jake Meyers is back for the Houston Astros. Mm. He is playing frequently. He is hitting in juicy spots in the batting order. He hit his first home run of the year today. I'm putting in a decent bid on him in my AL only league, and I am on the record on this podcast as being a pretty big fan of Jake Meyers and what he did last year. I don't see why he wouldn't be a thing this year, unless his injury, leaves him a bit less than he was last year. Chaz McCormick was sent down to the minors and then brought back up, it looks like, but I do think that Jake Meyers will continue to get the bulk of the center field plate appearances. Since coming back from the IL, it's been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's been 7 games, and Jake Meyers has played in every one of them in center field. I was wrong about the batting order, though. He is hitting 7th, 8th, and 9th. But, you know, it's a good enough lineup that there will still be opportunities down there.
Yeah, 100%.
Maybe not 9th, because that means you're hitting behind Martin Maldonado.
But you're right on the wraparound for the top of the order to hit you and score you some runs. So. Yeah. A little bit of a balance there. Dig it. Okay, let's go to some pitchers. I'm gonna just link these two together because you have the exact same notes written for both of them. Ronny Garcia and Dean Kramer.
You can lump in Devin Smeltzer here too.
Okay, so we'll lump Devin Smeltzer in here. So what is it? Can you just read me off what your notes are underneath these players?
Hate it.
Yeah. I mean, I know.
You know what I was thinking? We have a bunch of pitchers listed here, and all I could think of as I'm looking at this list of pitchers, one could say that. But I'm looking at this list of pitchers, and I'm just thinking of like the Jim Carrey Grinch, where I'm going down this list, and I'm like, hate, 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 loathe entirely, and just it's bad. For the record, on this list of pitchers, the loathe entirely is Jackson Tetrault of the Washington Nationals.
shocking that you have a deep, just loathe entirely, immense hate for an NL East pitcher that is not on the Mets.
I know. It's
curious.
Crazy how that works out. I almost chose Jackson Tetrault to do a deep dive on because he's had two really good starts on the surface this past week or so.
Yeah.
But he was so obnoxiously lucky, and I do not want any of our beloved listeners to fall for his lies. So I do not think unless the league is deep enough where like all of these guys are rostered, I would not add any of them.
Dig it. Okay. So let's quick here. Are there any pitchers that we have listed here? Because I don't want to talk about folks we don't have like super relevant stuff to talk about with them. Is there anyone here that you do like that we can wrap the episode up with?
Sure. One guy who was brought up from the minors and then sent down after his start, who performed well and has performed well already this year, Josh Winder of the Minnesota Twins. If another rotation opening pops up for the Twins, I would absolutely be looking to add Winder. He has had, he's looked good in his limited opportunities this year. And then Andre Pallante of the St. Louis Cardinals. Man, the Cardinals just have that devil magic where they seem to get the most out of these underwhelming looking pitchers. Mm-hmm. And Andre Pallante has a little bit of Joe Ryan to him, where he's got a very interesting fastball. It's not, and it's like all he has. You know, Joe Ryan has his slider also. I don't know that Pallante has that second pitch to lean on. But I mean, because of the environment and his success already, he's, and you know, that very interesting fastball, he's probably my favorite available starting pitcher in this sub 20% range. It's honestly, we're already at that time of year. It is slim pickings.
Yeah, pretty rough. I mean, we've talked about maybe potentially at some point expanding the threshold for ourselves from like 20 to 25%. I know we did that last year, later in the season. I think we put 30%, because like at the end of the year, we have a lot of folks who are going to like playoff matchups for certain leagues and things like that. So it's a little more acceptable because fewer people are fighting over the scraps and the waiver wire at that point.
Right.
People are pretty much on their stuff this year, it feels like. Yeah. On top of things.
So the last two players that I want to talk about before we sign off for the night. Lou Trevino has the job back in Oakland. He's got three saves in a row. And people cut bait when he lost his closer job, but he's back. I don't know if Oakland is trying to beef up his trade value. I don't really, besides that, I don't really see the value in installing him as the closer again, but that's what they're doing. So, you know, if you need saves and Trevino is out there, go and grab him. And in interesting save developments, Nick Martinez, his usage in his, he's gotten 2-3 inning saves in a row, which like never ever happens. That's not a thing. 3 inning saves are rare. They happen in like blowouts. It's not really something that players do like repeatedly. I don't know if that means he's going to be a regular, like I don't, a long closer. Is that a thing? Can that be a thing? Maybe it's going to be a thing. I don't know. I'm saying thing too much, but Nick Martinez had, like, keep an eye on that. I have him in my NL only league, and I've been blessed with, you know, two random 3-inning saves. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye on that. It's interesting.
We'll take him however we can get him, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
Again. All right. I think that's going to be it for this week's episode of In the Deep. Schwabs and I back together again, finally, after a long hiatus of, doing solo podcasts instead. We appreciate you all listening, as always. Thank you so much. If you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us at our shared podcast account at In the Deep PL. And you can also follow us on Twitter at our individual accounts. That's going to be at Bunt Singles for myself, and then at Schwebsy. That's Schwebsy, no C for Schwebsy. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Schwebsy, send them out.
Bye, friends.
I have a very specific set of skills. It's stolen bases and batting average.
I have a very particular set of skills.
See, this is every time I do it.
Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Every time I do an impression, it's immediately not just one up. That is several ups.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.